This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Accelerate your day with today's business headlines with Volvo Cars.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Tan Chung Han. Okay, let's turn our attentions to Petronas, because in the news, especially as the new government looks at budgeting issues and its fiscal position, Petronas has proposed to acquire 25% stake in a liquefied natural gas project in Canada called LNG Canada.
Yeah, so with this 25% stake would make it the second largest partner in this project. Shell has a 40% stake, so they're the biggest partner. It's really quite surprising. When I first saw the news break, I was, oh, okay, this is quite a huge turner, I guess U-turn from last year. Was it last year?
Last year
in June, if I'm not mistaken, when Petronas...
July, when
Petronas called off plans to invest in this pipeline in Canada. I think at that point in time, you know, how much things have changed in a year. Oil prices were significantly lower back in June last year. I think now it's about $77 per barrel. So favorable oil prices, perhaps that's a timing. The timing is right now to invest in this project.
Yeah, you know, look, when Petronas pulled out of their previous LNG project, an ambitious one over there on the west coast of Canada, right? There are questions about, well, whether they will stay in the game, because there are plenty of, there's plenty of demand for LNG products, especially in our part of the world in Asia, and Canada could be was seen as a massive hub for that. So you got plenty of people involved in the market over there, right? So now we've got this announcement that they are going to take that stake in LNG Canada. So interesting turn of events here, keeping Canada the second largest resource holder in Petronas's portfolio, of course, after Malaysia.
I didn't know that. So I think it's also interesting to see where this, there's a kind of a plan of what this project is going to do, right? When Petronas pulled out last year, they were supposed to be the conduit to export the gas to Asia. So now that that's back on the table, I think, given the timing, they're saying, okay, well, now you can put the plan back on the table to export to Asia.
Okay, so here's why we're talking about this now, right? Because we've got some commentary from Wood Mackenzie. They are an energy research and consultancy firm, and they looked at this deal and they highlighted that costs will be a major concern for the project. So this project, again, is in Canada. At the same time, here at home, you've got commentary from the Minister of Finance, Lim Guan Eng, Saudara YB Lim Guan Eng, saying that, you know, moving forward, in order to maintain that fiscal deficit of 2.8%, they are going to be more reliant on Petronas dividends, right? So for Petronas, on one hand, they've got this massive potential there with the LNG space in Canada. And then on the other hand, here at home, the government wants more of their money, right? So how are they going to strike that balance moving forward?
Well, okay. So whether that will be, I'm sure Petronas has kind of figured this out, whether they can afford to invest in this project, because the returns, the yields could possibly cover that shortfall or the taxes that they're going to be paying to the government. I was a little bit concerned when I did hear that Saudara Guan Eng was going to be relying a little bit more on Petronas dividends. But if you do look at the breakdown, that 5 billion, to be precise, 5.4 billion ringgit that the government is going to get extra from corporate taxes to oil and gas companies, including Petronas, that's not all that much in the grand scheme of things. I was expecting it to be a lot more, but 5 billion, if you compare to what they're scrapping in terms of the projects that they've made not the top priority, they're going to be getting about 10 billion from that, if I'm not mistaken. So that's considered double the corporate taxes from oil and gas.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is not unusual. I mean, governments do budget based on what they expect revenues to be like, right? So the last budget was based on a lower expectation for crude, high expectation. So you expect some sort of returns. It does say in the reports, though, he's well aware that even though prices have risen quite dramatically for crude, that the estimated bump in revenues for government coming from Petronas aren't that high.
Yeah, that 5.4
billion. They're quite well aware of that, right? And so the question is, with the balancing game they're going to be having to make in order to make these numbers all kind of align.
Right. So speaking about numbers, right, one of the main number that many of the local business dailies fixate traded on is 21 billion ringgit. So 21 billion ringgit is the revenue
shortfall.
Loss, yeah, shortfall, mm-hmm. you know, from GST being removed. And even with the SST, which is set to come online in September of this year, Saudara YB said that, look, full realization of the SST won't really be seen until November or so. So you've got this interim of a good, 6 months, right, starting from June to November, before we can see SST at least try to reduce that gap.
Okay.
Now, that's for this year.
Yeah.
That's for this year.
What about next year?
Yeah, what about next year? Because you still had a good 5 months of GST collection for this year. Well, about 4.5, right? So next year, what's going to happen then? In other words, are these measures fundamentally sound and sustainable? I think that's the question.
Well,
that
obviously they think it is, and that's why they're proposing them. The question is whether they'll pan out to be so. But, you know, coming back to Petronas, I do think there is a very interesting discussion to be held in terms of how well run the state oil and gas entities have been. If you compare, say, Petronas with what happened in Indonesia with Pertamina, you know, and so
Petrobras?
On. Yeah.
In
so you can, they can either be run into the ground because they are completely politicized and at the behest of the government of the day, or they can be insulated from direct control and politicization or, you know, and so on and so forth, right? So we're looking at this reasonably successful model with Petronas, though it's often seen as a cash cow for the government. The question is, has the government sort of scaled down its dependence? And
I
over time,
it, does.
It has,
it
right?
Has,
so
yeah.
it's been a really successful model.
It has, and I think
that
has been, I think, one of the things that we've seen under the Najib Razak administration. The government really did, reduce its dependency on Petronas dividends for contribution to the country's coffers. In fact, I believe Najib Razak has urged the government to refrain from dipping into Petronas coffers.
Oh, speaking of dipping, 1MDB returns with renewed vigor as a story because, well, guess who was dipping into all kinds of little funds to make sense of the debts taken on by 1MDB.
Right. So yesterday, YB Lim Guan Eng said that the MOF has very reluctantly paid 143.75 million ringgit in interest on bonds issued by IPIC that was due at the end of May. So that payment was made. But it's not over because you've got another 810 million ringgit due between September and November of this year.
So this is, of course, not the end of the payments that 1MDB needs to make. We've also got the audit that's carried out by PwC on 1MDB. That's still ongoing. MBank has come out to say, this is the CEO, Datuk Sulaiman Tahir, he came out to say that, look, MBank's books are open to anyone who's investigating, so regulators, investigators of the 1MDB case. The books are open if they want to check on MBank's history. He says that it's been the case as such for 2 years. So
also in Singapore, we have news that the Malaysian task force investigating 1MDB had met with their counterparts in Singapore. And the counterparts include the Attorney General's Chambers, the Commercial Affairs Department, and the Monetary Authority of Singapore. And there are quite a few things they have agreed to do, which is to collaborate to recover the total sum of monies to the Malaysian government that allegedly misappropriated from 1MDB. They're also collecting evidence and tracking down witnesses.
Right. And hopefully that figure is large enough and will come in quick enough before that 810 million ringgit is due between September and November. Couple that with what's been raised in 24 hours by Tabung Harapan Malaysia.
Yep, right? 7 million if I'm not mistaken.
7 million.
7 million.
Yeah. So 7 million ringgit, you know, add to the pile and hopefully we can, try to do a dent. But I mean,
I don't think the expectation is that the Tabung Harapan will do a dent. I mean, but it's also unclear what the money is going to be used for at this point. I do want to come back just quickly, if you can, to just giving some more detail about the Singapore and Malaysia task force meeting, because they haven't announced a joint task force. All it was a meeting of counterparts. On the Singapore side, we know who the Malaysian side are, but the Singapore side is the Attorney General's Chambers, the Commercial Affairs Department, the Monetary Authority of Singapore. And I guess for Singapore, the integrity of of their financial system, especially in terms of the possibility of Singapore being used as a conduit for transnational crime, I think very important. Because remember, they were quite harsh in dealing with those individuals linked to some illegal money flows, including the ex-BSI bank wealth planner, Yao Jiawei, and also they dealt with the Falcon Private Bank there in Singapore. So they, I guess, very keen to make sure that they don't come off tainted in this scandal.
Yeah, so it's not just individuals, not just Falcon Bank, Credit Suisse and UOB also got fined by MAS last year. But,
I also was wondering, you know, there was that, I think, issue in Switzerland where there was a vote to have the money or monies, I guess, linked to 1MDB repatriated to Malaysia. And Malaysia at that point in time decided not to make a claim saying that, you know, no money is missing from 1MDB, so that money must not have come from 1MDB. I wonder whether now, under the new government, they might be making a different kind of plea.
Right, because in recent weeks, we have had the Swiss AG, we've had the US DOJ, right, all these various regulators who are looking into the 1MDB case, as far-reaching as it is, you know, saying that, look, they're going to, they have expressed their renewed commitment to work with the government of the day, the Malaysian government of the day, to get to the bottom of 1MDB.
In fact, our task force, our special task force on 1MDB, met with officers of the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation as well as the Department of Justice last week. So this meeting with Singaporean counterparts comes a week after the meeting with American counterparts.
Okay, so now if we were to, I guess, look at the country's finances, now, if we're going to try and get some of these monies back to town, what we're going to use that money for, whether that's going to be put into the Tabung Harapan, who knows, right? Tabung Harapan, really, I thought that was really quite interesting for me, because 7 million in 24 hours just speaks to the I guess how people are invested in trying to contribute, that they're invested in the financial decisions or the fiscal decisions of the country. What was also interesting yesterday, Han, was the press conference with Finance Minister Saudara Lim Guan Eng. And, you know, I guess how he seems to view the state of the economy.
Right. So on one hand, you know, he keeps reiterating that the economic fundamentals of Malaysia remain strong. Okay, so that's the position of the MOF right now. But at the same time, you know, with the Tabung Harapan, you know, it seems to be a conflicting message, you know, because on one hand, you want to think that the new finance minister has a strong rein on fiscal policy. You've got the sovereign nation's fiscal policy at your disposal. You know, on the other hand, you're accepting these donations from the people. Now, I wonder if that's a conflicting message. Now, I want to be very clear here. Yeah, I want to be very clear here. So this is not I'm not pointing any fingers at those who have donated. I think that's a great display of patriotism, right? And that's good. And that signals renewed confidence in the government of the day. So I'll give them that. But from the government side, is it really sound policy to be accepting donations from the public?
Okay, let's turn to Professor Raja Rasai, an economist at University of Malaya, on the question of debt and crisis. This is what he said when we spoke to him recently.
Now, the euro is not controlled by the Greeks. It's collectively controlled, with Germany and France being the main countries that handle that. So when the Greek economy imploded, they had to pay all their debt in euros. That's almost like the case with Korea, except that they didn't have a common monetary union as you have in Europe. Fortunately for us, as Santri Zeti put out, the 1MDB debt is largely denominated in ringgit. Domestically denominated debt can easily be controlled because it's within the purview of the Bank Negara, the ringgit. You don't have external pressure in that sort of sense.
That was Professor Raja Rasai, economist at University of Malaya, sort of drawing a comparison between the Malaysian situation and the Greek one.
Right. So he's saying that, no, we're not in, in crisis mode, so to speak. Yeah. I do have to kind of come back to the issue of this Tabung Harapan and whether the optics of it, right? Whether this is signalling that perhaps Malaysia is looking at being in crisis mode. I honestly think, you know, the government is just responding to the public's want or desire to contribute. So because of this kind of crowdfunding platform, they're just saying now, well, let's just give them an official channel to do it.
Yeah, well, Okay, that may apply if, let's say, you're holding a party fundraiser. Okay, now you've got complete control over a sovereign nation's fiscal policy. What does that signal, though? That's inadequate, that you could use some help, right? As opposed to channeling the money back into the real economy.
What about the democratic process of being part of the you know, financial future of the country?
Sure, and that's fine. Well, if that's the case, there are other means to do it. Then maybe next year when you guys declare your taxes, don't claim back as much or pay more in taxes, you know, or be okay with the GST. Don't clamor for the abolishment of GST, right? It's a, because, okay, I was having this discussion with an economist over the last couple of days, and it's a pretty interesting story. Because for the longest time, you've got the opposition, well, that opposition being in the driver's seat saying that, hey, you know, let me be in the driver's seat. Now that you're in the driver's seat, the messaging is completely different now, right? So it is very unusual and rather disconcerting.
Okay, that's Tan Cheng Han. Coming up to the top of the hour, we have the news, and then we'll be back with the opening numbers on the on the stock market and more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Fuel your business drive with the Volvo S90 T8 twin engine. So cost efficient, it makes good business sense. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.